IVM. Hello, welcome and khushamadeed. You're listening to The Note with me, Mahrukh Inayat. As we go through this devastating second wave of COVID, all of us have been impacted. But what perhaps breaks my heart the most is the hundreds of children who have been impacted, some of them being called COVID orphans, having lost both their parents. Today on The Note, we have a very special guest, Prabhat Kumar, who's the head of child protection at a well-known NGO or a non-government organization called Save the Children. Prabhat, thank you so much for joining me on The Note.
Thank you so much.
Prabhat, it's devastating what's happening all around us. The Women and Child Development Minister, Smriti Irani, says there are 577 COVID orphans in the country from April 1st till Tuesday. Do you agree with this number? Do you think that this is being underreported, just like all the numbers around COVID deaths, fatalities, infections? Or is the number much larger, as per your understanding?
So let me tell you, the number that Honorable Minister has quoted happens to be a number that she has received and children who have lost both the parents. So these inputting of number and then specific reportings from between 1st April and yesterday takes time. So this is that number. But what we must also look is one total number of children who have lost their parent. There are a number of children who may have lost one parent. There are a number of children who may be handled by single parent and then they may not have lost both the parent by this during the second wave. So I think this number, one, it shows the good intention of government that they are looking at the number. And then if you have this number, something can be acted on. There is responsibility that government will take. I think it is time because India's total death toll is close to 300,000 as on date. There will be much larger needs of children. And children who have lost even single parent needs to be supported equally, because if you look at the dynamics in rural area or even in many cases urban area, what happens to child who has lost maybe mother or father, and then who, if someone was single breadwinner, if someone was providing caregiving support, so those dynamics gets broken.
So how big would you say is this crisis? Because like you mentioned, there are children who have lost one parent. In some cases, they've lost both the parents, the number being given by the government at this point. And then there are children who've lost their entire families.
So there is no specific number. We have been trying to calculate. We have been trying to reach to different places. There is no specific numbers that are available and that can be worked out. The easiest method is the health department in each of the state government has the number of total deaths available. You reach out to those families or break down the it into age groups and look at within the reproductive age group, what is total population, and then reach out to where their children are, who is taking care of them. So rather than people reporting, and this number like is some, the over 500 number might be something, is number which has been reported. There will be a lot of number which are not instantly reported. So what happens in our society is that when a child gets orphaned, the extended family member for some time takes care of that child. But what we need to ensure is if you need long-term care, state should reach out to these children, establish that number rather than having onus on child or their caregiver to be giving this number. And that the numbers are available and that has to be worked out. Till date, no one knows what that number is. Yeah.
Okay. So that's worrying because till date, we don't know what that number is and it could be any given the crisis. But what is the process that happens? How is it often identified? Because there might be layers before, there is first trauma within the family of losing two people. Let's imagine it's a COVID orphan who's lost both his parents. How does the government identify? What are organizations like yours doing?
So the process is simple, and then with existing social media and neighbor people at neighborhood or at in village, the village committees are something, though they are the one who report. So what ideally should happen is that if anyone identifies any such children who have lost their caregiver, or even for that matter, we should not wait for lives to be lost. So if suppose, and we have seen several such incidences, if a child is staying in household where their one parent or both the parents are being hospitalized or put in isolation, the child needs caregiving support even at that point of time. And we should not wait that if some incidents, untoward incidents happened or their caregivers, a parent or guardian had lost life, then we are reaching. So simple way is that people should call up either 1098, which is All India Helpline number for Childline, or they should contact district level child welfare committees and then report there. There are some of the state level institutions such as State Commission for Protection of Child Rights in certain states who have opened their helpline. So these are three important steps. People who don't know about these structures can also report to police, and then police will inform to the district child welfare committee. So they should be informed, and district child welfare committee is one which should actually decide. Even if child is put into the custody or caregiving of extended family member, it is district child welfare committee who should
decide on that.
Who should be informed and decide on that.
That's very important information that you're giving, Prabhat, because, you know, I like to call it a social media adoption. There were a lot of messages doing the rounds on WhatsApp groups and on social media platforms, you know, talking about young kids who could be taken up for adoption or COVID orphans in that matter. Clearly, this is illegal, is it not?
It is illegal to put a child's identity. And this, even most of people, and we at organization, whenever we received any such message, we tried to call back. I've individually called back certain people to try to understand what is case and ask them that this number, they can reach out to district authorities. Many of them were fake numbers, were not reachable. So it's completely illegal. And even with good intent, if someone is trying to do this, this will not be of benefit of child, because this is likelihood of a trafficker or exploiter getting active and trying to take advantage of such situation. The easiest way is get in touch with district child welfare committee through police or 1098 helpline number, report, because, and I'll explain what process takes place. So it's not just adoption. There are community-based rehabilitation processes that are there. So district child welfare committee, when they get such information, they do the home verification of child. It is called social investigation report. So you understand if what is caregiving setting, is child being eligible to, or can child stay with extended family member, or what is their situation, what is required. So there is set of community rehabilitation, and there are provision of sponsorship through government acts also. Mm-hmm. So we should activate those mechanisms. Second is the child is sent to child care institution, and then their long-term caregiving plan is made. Then it comes to, like, if child is found to be fit for sending for adoption, and then their match is done with prospective adoptive parents. So these are processes that should happen. But we feel the easiest, and our experiences from several other disasters and in long term has been, child should be close to the cultural environment where child has been brought up. So extended family member, sort of foster care or kinship care, works best with them. Yeah,
I think that's very important information that you're giving out. And also what you speak about, that a child should grow up in the environment that he or she is used to. In that respect, I want to ask you that the mental trauma that a child goes through when he or she loses a parent, imagine if that is double when he or she loses both their parents. What are the kind of, you know, organizations, or are there child helplines that are working to reduce this trauma? And what is the government doing? What are organizations like yours doing?
So under Juvenile Justice Act, there is provision of providing the counseling services. But let me admit that those services are, people's capacity to reach out and provide that support is not very adequate. And that is where organizations or big institutions who work on mental health issue, who have outreach programs, organizations like us who have counselors, they support in one, immediate counseling, But as you rightly said, that these children go through trauma, which cannot be addressed by just few counseling sessions. There has to be a process of healing that trauma, because when you communicate to a child that they have lost parent and they have to come back to that fact in terms. So in that process, we do something that we call art-based therapy or healing processes that takes place, which is slightly long-term. So that process has to be done simultaneously with children for longer duration, sometimes 3-4 months you provide, so that they are able to heal from that trauma and come out and accept the environment in which they are living.
Prabhat, given the pressure of the COVID-19 pandemic, we see the government has been woefully inadequate in actually curbing the pandemic. That is left for a separate discussion. What I want to ask you is, given the kind of situation that we're seeing, we're also seeing our frontline workers completely inundated with the number of cases that are coming in. In all of this, do you think the processes that can help these COVID orphans are getting sidelined or not getting the amount of attention that they should be?
So child protection workforce, particularly these example that I gave of district child protection officer, district child welfare committees, or even staff of Childline, they are overstretched. And just like I'll draw the parallel, just like our health facilities can take up to the caseload or patients at certain level in institutions, similarly, there is certain level of casework that can be taken up by these child protection workforce. And that is what is challenge. We should step up, invest more. Imagine a district, average size of district in India is roughly around 3 million. And if there is one person sitting at district level with few more people is child protection resource, they of course need more hands, more volunteering help. And in times like this, many of them themselves are affected or impacted by the pandemic. So they are very much stressed. We have also seen, but let me also celebrate that whoever we have reached out to, the child welfare committees in certain districts, they have responded very well, be it night, early morning calls. So they are trying their best. But I think with more investment, taking their safety protocols, providing more human resources in terms of volunteer to them who can help in time like this will actually help them. To cut it short, they are stressed and it's not easy task to take care of such a large children. They are looking for support from many other people, and many other NGOs have come forward, including we have been working closely with some of such district child welfare committees or district child protection officers and helping them.
Okay, finally, Prabhat, I want to ask you that there are a lot of experts who are saying that the third wave is likely to hit adolescents. We are also seeing that a larger number of these COVID orphans are in the young age group between, 4 to 15, because they have younger parents who have, you know, died during the second wave. How much more difficult is your task likely to become if what these experts are saying comes true? A, these orphans don't have their parents to look after them. They are in the hands of child welfare committees. We don't have a vaccine for adolescents yet. How hard is your task going to be in the months to come?
I think this is time where we need to step up, put more human resources, put more infrastructure in place, which we had not done earlier. So I'll give you an example again, and then you can understand from that. That in second wave, when there were a number of children whose parents were in isolation or hospital, they needed support. So there were certain states and certain districts where sort of transit homes were prepared to take care of, like, safe shelter, recreation, contact with parent, health needs of such children. But it was done parallelly. I think if we know that there is certainly going to be third wave, we need to be prepared beforehand, train people, capacitate them so that they can take care of such caseload. And that is what is needed. We be better prepared than responding at that point of time. So that would be, and both in terms of human resources and putting resource allocation, identifying that these are needs which children have. So one, respond to the needs of children who are affected or impacted by second wave, but look at preparedness and be prepared for next couple of months or year. That would be key.
It looks like a tall order. Prabhat, thank you so much for your valuable inputs. And clearly, for our COVID orphans, it's a long road ahead in terms of the kind of difficulties that they face. And given the extent of the damage that the second wave of COVID-19 has done, it looks like a very difficult path ahead. But very important information regarding the adoption of such COVID orphans. So don't go by any WhatsApp messages that you see. Those are completely illegal. And there is a formal path that Prabhat just spoke about, which we need to look at. Thank you so much, Prabhat, for joining me on The Note.
Thank you so much.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can listen to us on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are @IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm Mahrukh Inayat on Twitter and Mahrukh Inayat on Instagram as well.